This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you haven't seen Fantastic Mr. Fox, you have a second chance. It just came out on DVD and Blu-ray. The film was nominated for 2 Oscars, Best Animated Film and Best Original Score. We're going to hear the interview I recorded with Wes Anderson, who directed and co-wrote the film. Anderson also made the movies Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, and The Darjeeling Limited. Fantastic Mr. Fox is Anderson's first animated film. It uses miniature animal puppets and miniature sets animated through stop-motion photography to create a visually amazing world. The story is adapted from a children's book by Roald Dahl, but the movie adds new characters and storylines. At the beginning of the story, Mr. Fox moves his wife and son to a new home near 3 evil farmers. Mr. Fox has promised Mrs. Fox that he'll never steal chickens again because as a father, he couldn't risk being captured. But he succumbs to his animal instincts and steals some of the farmers' chickens. After that, the farmers are on the warpath against Mr. Fox and his family. Wes Anderson, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, I never read Roald Dahl. I never read Fantastic Mr. Fox, but I got a copy after seeing your film. What did the book mean to you, and why did you want to adapt it into a film?
Well, it was the first Roald Dahl book that I ever read as a child, and I became a huge fan of Dahl, and he was a big part of my childhood. For some reason, this book was the one I always kept with me. Wherever I lived when I went to college, I always had this book on my shelves. It's a slim book, and it's really kind of, I think it's for young children. But something about it always stuck with me. And I think it's the character of Mr. Fox is a very dull kind of figure, and he's the one who rescues everybody, but he's also the cause of all of their problems, and his personality gets them into these problems in the first place. And I think something about that grabbed me. And at a certain point, I started thinking I would like to do a stop motion film, and a stop motion film with puppets with fur. And it was a good opportunity for that. This connected with that.
You've added a lot of adult themes to this children's story. And by adult, I don't mean sexual. I mean more existential. And Mr. and Mrs. Fox used to steal chickens, but after getting trapped and nearly getting killed or losing their freedom in a cage, he swears he's going to give up stealing chickens, and he becomes a newspaper columnist instead. But he still has the hunger for chickens and for the adventure. And he has an existential crisis. Who is he? Is he a fox?
Yes, I think he likes the word existentialism more than anything else.
I want to play a clip in which he decides to go back to stealing chickens again, and he enlists his not very bright possum friend to be his accomplice. So this is Mr. Fox with his friend the possum, Kylie.
Who am I, Kylie?
Who, how? What now?
Why a fox? Why not a horse or a beetle or a bald eagle? I'm saying this more as, like, existentialism, you know? Who am I? And how can a fox ever be happy without you'll forgive the expression, a chicken in its teeth?
I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds illegal.
Here, put this bandit hat on. Maybe you're a medium. Take it off for a minute and don't wear it around the house.
I really love that. So what does it mean to be a fox? I love the idea that these animals are, that this animal in particular is having an identity crisis about whether he should be overcoming his fox instincts or not.
Yes, he's a bit obsessed with the idea of being a wild animal.
And, you know, the creatures in the film, you know, like they're all dressed as humans with, like, you know, suits and ties and dresses. They have like kitchens and living rooms and furniture. But underneath it all, I mean, they're animals. So, like, there's this wonderful scene at the kitchen table where Mr. Fox is reading a newspaper and Mrs. Fox brings out the pancakes for the family. But once they start eating, they just eat it like animals because that's what they are. And it's so
yes.
funny. And there's another scene like that I want to play just to give our listeners a sense of the story. And this is a scene where Mr. Fox, played by George Clooney, is talking to his lawyer, a badger played by Bill Murray. And the lawyer is advising him not to move into a house right near the really mean farmers who would probably like to kill a fox. So here's that scene.
In summation, I think you just got to not do it, man. That's all.
I understand what you're saying, and your comments are valuable, but I'm going to ignore your advice.
The cuss you are.
The cuss am I? Are you cussing with me?
No, you cussing with me?
Don't cuss and point.
You're
going to
cuss with someone.
Don't
you're not going to cuss with me,
you're
little
cuss.
Cuss
with me. Just by the tree.
Okay.
I love that, the way they actually like become animals.
Yes, it kicks in.
Yeah, and you use the word cuss through the movie instead of the F word. How did you decide cuss would be your substitute?
Well, I don't even remember. I think it was just to try to use the concept of profanity as a replacement for the profanity itself. It turns out to be very versatile.
Yes, you do use it very versatile. So, as the director and co-writer of the film, did you actually create the miniature animals?
Yes. You know, a movie like this, the process of the, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like to make this movie when we started out. I sort of had this thought that we were going to, that I was going to make the script and work on the sets and then sort of prepare the shots and have this plan and then hand it over to a team of animators, and they were going to hand me back a film a year later or something. I was going to put in an order for one Fantastic Mr. Fox according to these specifications, and they would send it back. That was not what happened. It ends up being the most involving kind of filmmaking that I've ever had anything to do with, and very fun. But the thing you quickly realize is that everything that is going to go on camera has to be manufactured from scratch. Everything has to be designed, and that means every little prop and every little moment is going to have a lot of thought go into it, and it's an opportunity, but it's not going to take care of itself. Nothing's going to just be discovered like stumbling across a location.
You have to create the bodies of the animals, the clothes they wear, the houses they live in, the street they live on, the sunrise, the sunset, you know, the ground beneath their feet. You have to create absolutely everything.
Yes, it actually was quite, you know, it's rare that you get the chance to say, I have an idea for a cloud that I want to do. It's going to be, leaves and trees and everything. And I think with stop motion, it's the combination of miniature with the idea that someone is taking these, you sort of sense that someone is taking these and moving them around and bringing them to life through some sort of handmade process that's just like a sort of magic. It's like toys.
Why don't you describe how stop motion photography works?
Sure, yes. Stop motion is it's that technique where you I'll describe it, it's particularly in relation to our movie. It's puppets, and in our case, these puppets have metal skeletons inside them. So if you move them a little bit, they stay in position. So the animator moves the puppets one frame at a time, and each time he moves it, so to complete an action, he poses it many, many times and takes a picture each time he reposes it, and then those are played back quickly, and it appears to move around, and that's really the basic technique of the whole movie, this old-fashioned style of animation.
So do you need to have a little bit of OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, to work in stop-time animation, because everything has to be handmade, and then you have to move each puppet like a fraction of an inch for each frame that you're shooting?
Yes, well, it's, you know, the people who actually do the physical process of animating, they have to be experts. They have to be very experienced, and they have to be supremely talented to do this. And there aren't that many people to do it. So it's a special personality type. It's special talents. And, you know, when you prepare a shot for a stop motion film, when you prepare the shot, you draw what you want what you want the shot to be. You've recorded the voices already, and you work with the animator to make a plan of what's going to happen in time. the animator has a sheet that's prepared that shows what happens on each frame. So when you study the sheet, you'll see on frame 220, a character is beginning to lift his arm and pronouncing a sh sound. You know, it's down to the syllables. You know, there's four frames where he's pronouncing sh, and then he's moving to the next thing. It's the most detailed preparation you could possibly have for a shot, and yet each animator will surprise you with how he interprets this incredibly precise plan. And that's sort of the part that you just can't understand. Something happens, you know, they work in this very, very gradual process, but they're doing something that is just, that really is like magic. And it isn't just moving the puppet around, it's making it seem like it's alive.
Right. And I know I want you to just like describe in detail one of the puppets, maybe Mr. Fox.
Okay. Mr. Fox, that puppet is, let's say he's maybe 13 inches tall, the main puppet, which the main puppet of the, I'll explain what I mean. There are different scales. So a full scale, what we call a full scale Mr. Fox puppet, is about 13 inches tall. It has this steel or titanium skeleton that has joints in it, and even joints in the fingers and many bones in the face. And it has fur over it. It has eyes that move around separately, and you can move them with a little pin. And it's got a costume.
Describe the costume.
The costume is a sort of rust-colored corduroy suit with a terry cloth shirt with yellow zigzags on it. And he has I saw one of our people making something one day. I was like, "What are you working on?" It was he has little stalks of wheat in his pocket, like cigars or something. And this one of the people who works in the props department was making wheat, and to see somebody make tiny miniature wheat, it's just you know you're dealing with a whole other realm than you've ever experienced.
Stop motion photography was developed, I think, for the movie King Kong, used again in Mighty Joe Young and other adventure films. Were you a big fan of King Kong when you were growing up or when you became an adult?
Yeah, I loved King Kong. You know, what I grew up, I think when I became aware of stop motion was, I can't remember the name of the guy, Willis maybe? Is Willis, something like Willis is the guy who did the stop motion on King Kong. And his protege was Ray Harryhausen, who's sort of the most famous stop motion guy ever. And he did a number, but the ones I saw were the ones that are sort of Greek mythology. Sinbad, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, Jason and the Argonauts. There's another Sinbad movie also. Things like the Clash of the Titans. Those movies all have a big stop motion element to them, and I really loved them as a kid. And also there were these TV the holiday specials that the Rankin Bass Company did. The Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and there's one about there's one that's sort of the story of how Santa Claus came to be. Those were ones that my brothers and I were really taken with.
Now, there's a sport that's played in Fantastic Mr. Fox, and I think this is a sport that you made up that's not in the book, and it's called Whack Bat. And I want to play a short scene in which the rules of the game are explained. These are, like, wonderful rules. And Owen Wilson, who's in a lot of your movies, he plays the coach. And in the scene, what we're going to hear is the coach explaining the rules of Whack Bat to the perfect cousin, Christofferson, because he's going to put Christofferson in as a replacement for Ash. So the coach is played by Owen Wilson, who's in a lot of your films. Ash is played by Jason Schwartzman, and the cousin is played by your brother, Eric Anderson.
Basically, there's three grabbers, three taggers, five twig runners, and the player at whack bat. The center tagger lights a pine cone, chucks it over the basket, and the whack batter tries to hit the cedar stick off the cross rock. Then the twig runners dash back and forth until the pine cone burns out and the umpire calls hot box. Finally, at the end, you count up however many score downs it adds up to and divide that by nine.
Got it.
Go in for Ash. Substitution! Ash, come out. You need a breather.
What? Come out? What? I still feel good, coach. Let me finish this eighth.
No, come on. Step out. Let's go.
Am I getting better, Coach?
Well, you're sure as cuss not getting any worse.
Really? I mean, you think I could end up being as good as my dad if I keep practicing?
Your dad? Your dad was probably the best whack bat player we ever had in this school. No, you don't want to have to compare yourself to that.
So it's another scene from Fantastic Mr. Fox. I love the description of the rules of whack bat. And if you're not an athlete and don't follow sports closely, that's how a lot of sports rules sound to you. So yes. What about you? Do you follow sports carefully, or do they all sound as ridiculous as a whack bat?
Well, I used to follow certain sports so much more carefully. Like the 1975 baseball season, I know every single player, every detail of it, but I know absolutely nothing about it right now. And I used to follow tennis very closely, but cricket, for instance, is incomprehensible to me. We made the movie in England, and I hadn't really watched a cricket match before. In fact, I'd seen a couple in India, but I've never been able to grasp the first thing about how that operates. It doesn't really seem to make any sense. But this game has especially complicated rules.
Your new film, Fantastic Mr. Fox, is almost like a musical in the sense that there's so much underscoring through the film, and then there's some records used through the film. And so I want to talk a little bit about the music. Let's start with why there is so much of it in the movie.
Well, you know, with most animated films, it's sort of wall-to-wall music. And I didn't really expect to do that. But I guess what usually happens with me is I sort of put in as much music as the movie feels like it's willing to accommodate. I like music in movies. In the case of this one, I had a couple of ideas at the beginning. One was that I thought the score could have a kind of Peter and the Wolf element where we would assign certain instruments to different characters. And it ended up being that, you know, Mr. Fox sort of has this banjo that goes with them, and the farmers have different horns, and there's a rat that has sort of whistling and a Spanish style, kind of flamenco guitar. But the main score is written by Alexandre Desplat, who sort of took a lot of different influences and ideas that we had and pulled them all together and invented his own own version of all that.
The very first song that we hear, though, is this.
Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, green estate in the land of the free, raised in the woods so's he knew every tree, killed him a bar when he was only three. Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
So what is the Ballad of Davy Crockett from the Walt Disney TV show doing in your movie?
Well, somewhere along the way, I started thinking, often I don't really know exactly why I suddenly say have an idea like this, but in this case, I almost feel like his hat may have a relationship to our main character.
Because he looks
like he'd be wearing Mr. Fox on his head. At a certain point, I started sort of thinking I would like to use music from children's films and children's entertainment anyway. And we ended up with, we have Davy Crockett that's at the beginning of the movie, and we have three different songs that are by Burl Ives, who's actually in some of the, when I refer to the Rankin Bass holiday specials, he's involved in at least one of them. And we have music from the Disney Robin Hood. And so it sort of became part of the whole, you know, we also have the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones.
Wes Anderson, thank you so much for talking with us, and congratulations on the film.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you for having me.
Wes Anderson, he directed and co-wrote Fantastic Mr. Fox, which just came out on DVD and Blu-ray. This is Fresh Air.